We have been telling people that this is the 11th hour, but now you must go back and tell people that this is the hour. And there are things to be considered. Where are you living? What are you doing? What are your relationships? Are you in right relation? Where is your water? Know your garden. It is time to speak your truth. Create your community. Be good to each other. And do not look outside yourself for your leader. Then he clasped his hands together and smiled and said, "This could be a good time. There is a river flowing now very fast. It is so good and swift that there are those who will be afraid. They will try to hold on to the shore, and they will feel they are being torn apart and will suffer greatly. No, the river has its destination. The elders say we must let go of the shore and push off into the middle of the river, keep our eyes open and our heads above the water. And I say, see who are in there with you and celebrate. At this time in history, we are to take nothing personally, least of all ourselves. At this moment, for the moment that we do, our spiritual growth and journey come to a halt. The time for the lone wolf is over. Gather yourselves. Banish the word struggle from your attitude and your vocabulary. All that we now do must be done in a sacred manner and in celebration. We are the ones we've been waiting for." I looked a little bit into the Hopi history and found prophecies. They have a history, a long history of prophecies, some that preceded the coming of white folks to this land, and spoke of whites, of death of the buffalo, of the coming of wires and roads and genocide. And I was shocked and ashamed and, of course, defensive when the Hopis compared the coming of whites to World War I. That was their experience. And the tragedy. By the end of the Second World War, the number had gone from 60 million to 800,000. And from and to see from their perspective, it looks like white people came, saw what they wanted, took it. The prophecy itself asks us, me, lots of questions. What motivates us? Who have we been waiting for? We being I, but it was addressed to us, to all. So forgive me for using the big we. Why is now the time? What does the prophecy mean when we are told the river is moving very fast? What is this shore and what is the analogy of this shore about? And why do we grasp to it? Why will we feel torn apart if we grasp to it? What does it mean to be a lone wolf? What does it mean to struggle? What does it mean? What directions are we given? First question is, who are we? This we that is addressed. On one hand, we come here and I hear that we are children of God. And I am told that in the New Testament it says, "Yea, ye are gods." This is something that's hard for me to understand, but you keep telling me. And I understand that I am not what I think I am. I'm not what I feel I am. Buddhism teaches us about our basic goodness, about our Buddha nature, some part that is above or removed from what I feel like is the way that I have stained my existence or something like that, the fear and the anxiety. On the other hand, Brené Brown has 4 best-selling books and untold millions have watched her TED Talks, where she talks about a different experience. One where she coaxes us into a greater awareness of our negativity, of our shame-based existence. And that's a different perspective entirely than this child of God, this whole being. As a group, we, as our culture, if I may, we overconsume as we look for comfort and ease. We pollute our world. We create disease in ourselves and in our planet. We grasp for more and push away what we do not want. And the wise from other cultures, especially His Holiness the Dalai Lama, says that we take directions as something that we're doing wrong. He says he needs to be very careful when he's talking to Westerners, because instead of a direction, it seems like, oh, what am I? There's this automatic sense of I'm doing something wrong, where he's saying, oh, try this. Instead, it's a new thing for me to beat myself with. Brené Brown notes our propensity towards perfectionism and judgmentalism, concern about what others think. She did research, 10,000 pieces of research, and what she found was something that described to me very, very clearly. This notion of I'm going to work and work and work and wear my exhaustion as a status symbol. That's how valuable I am, or that's how valued I am, because I work myself to death. And the sense of competition. When she found herself in that research, she also found me, and apparently, 10,000 others who've seen her TED Talks may relate as well. And I think the prophecy addresses me. And then the next question is, what is the river a metaphor of? And it's described as moving very fast, like there's some urgency, and it has a power to it. And is it rushing towards someplace good, or is this waterfalls that we're heading towards? Overall, the tone seems to be that this is a wake-up call, a call to action, internal and external. And Pema takes the position that it's an internal wake-up call. This is time for me to be reflective, develop a different relationship, to practice, to have a practice of internal spiritual development. And Megan Wheatley says, we must reach outside of ourselves. When I was thinking about this, other metaphors using water came to mind. Brené Brown talks about shame being as a swamp that we get stuck in. And it seems like then this great river would have this tributary that goes out into a place that's mucky. On the other hand, famous, I think it's Thich Nhat Hanh, who talked about the lotus flower is rooted in mud, and it grows this great beauty. So what we think is mud is also great nourishment. So we've got two different, almost extreme interpretations or tributaries. Pema Chodron seems to lean toward an experience of being a stream that's a path towards awakening. And we are told in the prophecy to keep our heads up and our eyes open, to be aware. That seems to be a common theme, that this is about awareness, this is about noticing, this is about waking up. The other place that I kept running into the water metaphor was I listened to Audio Dharma, which comes out of Redwood City in California, and they were talking about water as being the meditation practice itself. And I could see going into a meditation as being going to the bottom, underwater, and finding a strange comfort there. And water being a place where my feverish thoughts slow down, my world slows down. What is the shore? The prophecy is clear that those who try to hang on to the shore will experience great pain for their efforts. So maybe one shore is the past. I'm trying to hold on to the past, and the other shore is the future. And then being pulled in two directions or trying to grasp two things that I have no ability to grasp. Maybe one shore is all those we think should change so that I feel different. Maybe the other shore is my own self-contempt. And I have to push away from those shores and go off into the middle of the stream. Pema suggests that one side is unfounded hope, that there's a blind hope that things are going to get better, and that the other side is fear. And then the notion of being torn up by either one of those because I'm not in the center. Pema also says that the shore that we are grasping at will tear our flesh. She also used the word fundamentalism. Fundamentalism is one of the shores that I grasp onto when I think I am right and I think they are wrong. And I know because this is what I believe. And I can prove it because I believe it. Wheatley says the river has currents and challenges and the terrors and the promise of life. She asks a different question. Why don't we let go of the shore? Why move into a rushing river? And her answer is different from Pema's. Pema says that we go into the middle of the river for that self-development so that we can be mindful, so that we can be aware. Hers is more that we go to the center so that we may be of service. And at first they struck me as, well, one of those people is right and the other one's not. And then isn't mindfulness and service, aren't they related? Aren't they prerequisites? In 12-step programs, the notion is that if it is by service that is the primary tool that relieves me of the bondage of my self-centeredness, my self-centered fear. I think it also moves me up the ladder, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. So instead of this survival or this safety, I get to move all the way up to belonging. When I'm willing to reach out and to be of service. And there's something about my world getting bigger than just me, a vacation from me. Meg Wheatley says, we don't develop our minds, our awareness, our capacity to navigate the challenges of our current experience to be more comfortable. Our task is to be brave without being aggressive. She teaches that we go into the river to be of service, that our practice includes the primary task of not adding to the aggression in the world, not adding to the fear in the world. So, the prophecy calls for us to band together. I say it, and then you say it. We band together.
We band together.
We band together.
We band together.
The prophecy says the time for the lone wolf or the one wolf is over. And it instructs us. See all, I'll say it, you say it. See all who are with us.
See all who are with us. See all who are with us.
See all who are with us.
In this room, in our homes, on the highway, on the internet, we are connected. And it says, repeat after me, we see all who are with us and celebrate.
We see all who are with us and celebrate.
The prophecy counsels also against struggle, which seemed to be a common denominator of those things that Brené Brown saw within herself that I related to. Struggle, struggle, struggle. Because I needed to prove something or not digress or win. And it says, we banish the word struggle from our attitudes, our vocabularies. And what would we replace it with? I am enough. I have enough. I am enough. I have enough. I have enough to share and to spare. Furthermore, we are asked not to take anything personally, to take nothing personally. If anybody has an idea about that one, please see me afterwards. I think it would be to have a self-definition that would cancel out this need to take things personally. If I know who I am, where I stand, Meg Wheatley also uses this metaphor of being in this dream as an opportunity for service. We are here together, becoming aware of our opportunities to be helpful, to be compassionate to those who might be in the position of struggling that we so often find ourselves in as well. I know about struggling. I know about taking things personally. May I have compassion for those who I might judge who know that position as well? If I am under the lash of taking things personally, I would think that I would have some humility in noticing it in others. Shanti Deva. Pema quotes Shanti Deva in saying, for as long as it takes, forever, if that needs to be, as long as there's suffering in the world, we wish to be of benefit. And here we often talk about the practice, the discipline of striving to be at choice, to be aware of what my thinking is and how I'm leading myself, how I'm perceiving the world. We develop the muscles of noticing what I'm thinking and feeling. When fear and anxiety, when anger and judgment are driving my bus. We aspire to move towards the middle and to become more aware. We aspire to be helpful and grateful. Amen. Thank you.